Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired, well, at least a little bit of it, on Saturday, March 5th, 2016. This is episode 1267. Troubles at the studio took most of this show off the air, but you're going to hear the whole thing because I just kept doing it. So you're going to be the first to hear the whole show as it was originally intended. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/techguy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of super tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. Epson's EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit epson.com/ecotank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk, well, anything with a chip in it. Computers, the internet, that has a chip in it, doesn't it? It's made of chips. Home theater. Yeah, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, joins us every week to talk about home theater, but I can answer questions too on that subject. Digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, Skype work. You can Skype out. Reach us. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Remember that because that's the place to go if you want to find out what's happening on the show. You don't have to write anything down. It's all there. No sign up, no fee, just techguylabs.com. In fact, that's really all you have to remember. I don't want you writing things down while you're out and about doing your chores on the weekend. It's funny. I have friends in the press. This is one time where Leo wins. I have friends. I'm not talking about the Academy Awards either. I have friends in the press who have Galaxy S7 phones that can't write about them because it's embargoed. Because it's supposedly it's not out yet. And yet, I, little old me, who doesn't do that, I don't do the press stuff. I feel like if I'm going to really have an objective voice, I should just buy them like a real person. You know, like Consumer Reports does this too. I would just kind of buy it and experience the pain of the price and all of that. And I ordered it from T-Mobile, and lo and behold, it came on Monday, which is a little earlier than I expected. It came like it was just announced at Mobile World Congress last week. The Galaxy, this in my hands is the S7 Edge. I'll give you the negatives right up front, okay? No replaceable battery. No, they've for some reason only got 32 gigs of storage built in. There's a good side to that in a second I'll tell you about, but right now only 32 gigs of storage built in. they're doing the same thing. I mean, if you like Samsung phones, you're used to the physical home button, much like the Apple iPhone. But most other Android devices have abandoned a physical home button for an on-screen home button. And if you've used other devices, you might be puzzled by the capacitive buttons, the menu buttons that they put in the bottom. They've reversed them from the standard. So traditionally, it's the back button, the home button, and the recents button, and for some reason, Samsung does it the other way around. Those are the negatives. The positives, oh man, is it gorgeous. I kind of went crazy, got the gold one, and it looks like it's beautiful, a solid brick of gold. I don't know how the scratching is going to be. So far, no scratches. I've had it since Monday. And there's some sort of finish on it. It does attract fingerprints like crazy, but... And I'll be getting a case pretty quick. But it is the loveliest phone on the market today. Especially the Edge. That's the one I got with this screen that curves around on the left and the right. That gives you a 5.5-inch screen, but no bezel at all. It goes all the way to the edge. That's actually sometimes a negative. It's kind of hard to hold the phone because there's very little edge to hold it with. And if you hold it and your finger touches the screen, it's like it's touching the screen and things can happen. I also turned off the silly Edge feature. They have a little tab on the Edge that you can slide open. Takes over the screen, though. It's just like an app. I don't get it. So I turned that off. I don't use Samsung's TouchWiz either because I find that odd. But the nice thing about Android, you can put any launcher on there you want. And so I just put my standard Nova launcher and I put my standard icon layout and my widget layout. And I'm very happy. Man, it's a gorgeous screen. Now, it only has 32 gigs of storage, but it does. They did bring back the SD card up to 200 gigabytes on that. So, you know, I put in the SD card. The problem is they haven't used this technique that Google is now using in Marshmallow called adopting the extra storage to make it integrated into the whole. So it feels like it's one giant storage unit. It still has a separate storage for the SD card, and that means some applications won't go there, and some data can't be stored there. If you want an application to have a widget, you can't put it on the SD card. It's kind of funky. It's all right. I guess you can live with it. And you know what? I loaded everything I have on here. And the music, I just put all the music on the SD card. And that worked out just fine. Battery life, very good. They put a larger battery in here. It was the S6 had 3,000 milliamp hours. This has 3,600 milliamp hours. Seems to be enough to get me through the day pretty well in normal circumstances. It's just a beautiful phone. It's going to be a shame to put a case on it, although I probably will because it's so hard to hold. I'm just afraid of dropping it. They must have coated this back because I haven't scratched it at all, even though I'm, you know, kind of rough with my phones. Fingerprints, yes, but no scratches. So expensive, yeah. Well, all these high-end phones are in the $600 to $700 range, and this is no exception. Be sold by all four carriers in the U.S. No unlocked versions. You've got to get it from T-Mobile. Samsung's only selling T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint, or AT&T. And, of course, no more subsidies. So that kind of doesn't make any sense anymore since you're paying, you know, you're paying for it. But that's all right. Oh, did I mention the camera? Wow. Wow, wow, wow. One of the best cameras I've ever used, especially in low light. Very, very big aperture. That's what photographers talk about, is the aperture. It's f1.7. That is very, very fast. It means good low-light performance. They reduce the number of pixels from 16 to 12. That also improves low-light performance. Dual flash. I'm very impressed with the pictures I've been able to take with this. In low light, just fantastic. Samsung has, I think, a winner. And a credible competitor to the iPhone. For the people who are paying $600 or $700 for a phone, this is a very credible competitor. Now, I do think there are different kinds of people. There's iPhone people, just as there for years were Mac people and Windows people. There's Mac, there's iPhone people, and there's Android people. And the Android is kind of like the Windows contingent. People who like to fiddle with their phones, customize it, tweak it. Because I've tweaked mine like crazy. Like crazy. But I look for that. In a phone. So on the pros and cons, the pros are it's the best screen, the best camera in the business, period. Best looking phone in the business, I think, period. That's subjective. You may not agree, but I do. I think it is beautiful. It's very fast. Great. Samsung decided to use a Snapdragon 820 processor in the U.S. That's a great fast processor. You couldn't. Yeah, I don't think you can get faster. This competes very well with the Apple iPhone, which also has an incredibly fast processor. So you won't be waiting around. They put a lot of memory in this too, 4 gigs of RAM, and that means everything is snappy. That was a problem with earlier Android devices, particularly Samsung devices. I don't see that here. No hesitation at all. On the negative side, only 32 gigs of storage, but they brought the SD card back. That might make it better. It is waterproof. That's a positive. The edge screen sometimes is a little sensitive. That combined with the speed of the phone sometimes makes you feel like it's doing things you didn't. Wait, stop. No. That's okay. You'll learn to live with that. And of course, the price is very high. That's a negative. You can get a very good phone for now, $250 to $400, a very good Android device. But if you're in the you're in the high end Android Apple market, this is a credible option. I wish they'd used the Type C connector. They're still using a micro USB connector. That's probably because they wanted to continue to work with their VR, their Samsung Gear VR helmets or visors, and those have micro USB connectors. Only one speaker, no stereo speaker, but that's the same for the iPhone. I'd like to see two. Many Android devices now have stereo speakers, but a nice phone, isn't it? It's pretty. I'm saying, isn't it pretty? Like you can see it. Imagine, if you will, a brick of gold with a phone embedded in it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to your calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 8888, ask Leo, 888-827-5536. When you call, you'll be greeted by the lovely and talented Heather Hammond. She's loving that music. You're rocking out. Hey, Heather.
I love ELO. Thanks, Nathan.
ELO, Electric Light Orchestra. Is that who that was?
Mm.
Love them. Jeff Lynne and Company.
Yep.
What, I see the panel is full.
There sure
are people
is.
On every line.
Really huge variety, too. Can I just say
yeah.
that? At the top.
So what do you think?
Big variety of callers. Well, Chris in Charlestown, Rhode Island. Got to go to him just because he's so close to your mom.
Charleston. Charlestown?
Oh, did...
I don't know.
He said Charles.
I don't know. Let's see.
Anyway,
I'll find
it's like
out.
A horror film what his phone is doing to him.
I've heard that one before. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. This is Chris from Charlestown, Rhode Island, right down the road from your mom.
Nice. That's nice. Well, say hi to Mom when you drive by.
I shall.
Thanks.
We have spoke before.
Okay.
About this issue, probably a year or so ago. My right. phone is robo-dialing predominantly at night.
You mean it's making outbound calls by itself?
The last number dialed, I called my brother from Rhode Island to Colorado at 4:58 in the morning.
And you didn't do that.
I did not do that. My brother called me. Yeah.
Yeah. And did your brother answer and say, who's this?
I don't know. He texted me back and said, you called me again.
Uh-huh.
And that woke me up.
Oh, I'm sorry. And the phone, when it's at 4:58 in the morning, where is the phone?
On my nightstand, face down.
Huh.
I'm wondering if my Bluetooth actually, in hindsight, might be doing something because, as you know, if you double push a button on the Bluetooth,
yeah.
dial the last number.
Was your brother the last number called?
Yes, he was.
Okay. I think you've narrowed it down.
So I'm working on it.
It's redialing.
Yeah. The question that I was wondering is if somewhere in the Twit Army, somebody knew how to get to the logs in the dialer to find out what app is accessing it.
Golly. What kind of phone is it?
I'm still hanging on to my Note 3.
Okay, so it's Android, and it's Android 4 probably, yeah?
5.
5. Okay, you upgraded to Lollipop.
Yep.
You'd think, I mean, that's one of the things I like about Android is, unlike Apple, which really locks the phone down for security reasons, you have access to things like, the phone log. I have no idea. That must live somewhere What you want to know is, well, what app or how is that dialing happening? I think you've nailed it. I think that, you know, one thing you could try is do you turn the Bluetooth headset completely off?
I haven't been, but I'm going to start tonight.
Yeah, I'd do that and see. I feel like you've nailed it. But I don't know how to get the Android call log like to that detail. But Android, you know, Android is just Linux. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a log somewhere that you could open up in a text editor. Or an event logger. So somebody in the chat room says, yeah, I used to use an app called Event Logger.
Not as tricky as I used to be as I get older.
There are apps. There's an app called Call Log Monitor that does seem to do more about with your call history. Gosh, I would think, you know, computer operating systems log everything. They log all the events and everything. In fact, that's a trick that bad guys use to get unsuspecting Windows users to freak out. They when they call and they say, "Oh, we're calling from Microsoft, and you have virus on the computer. Here, I can show you." And they make them launch a program that nobody ever knows about in Windows called the Event Viewer, and that's that views the log, and it shows all sorts of red X's for failed things, which is normal, but it freaks people out.
I've been calling a fellow parishioner of mine the past 2 weeks. They've hit him at dinner time.
But he was smart. He knew, right, I hope?
He's never had a PC with Windows 8.
So he knew. He said, you got the wrong guy. Yeah. I would guess that you've nailed it, but and I don't know. Well, you know what you nailed. You said it. You said the right thing when you said, "I bet you the army, the tech guy army, can find the answer to this one." That the chat room's probably already Googling right now. So keep listening, and if we find something,
they will.
Yeah, if anybody can find it, man, they're amazing. I'll have them. I'll put them to work. They're like Sherlock Holmes has the Baker Street Irregulars. I got the Twit Army. We call them twits, but that's with love in our heart and our voices. they're called twits because the podcast network is called Twit for This Week in Tech. And I am, by the way, just in case you don't know, the chief twit. So I assume that mantle myself. We'll see if we can find it. There's got to be. I do see some apps for Android that let you at least log going forward. But I bet you there's a log somewhere on there. Modern operating system like that would probably do it. James in Irvine, you're next. Hi, James. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a question regarding Wi-Fi access.
Okay.
I am trying to – hold on a minute. I need to set up Wi-Fi restrictions for a certain time of the night.
Yeah.
I know you've had this question before.
Yeah, that's router specific, really. Some routers will do it, yeah.
Okay, let me explain what I need. I need to restrict access to basically Wi-Fi access, but I need to allow it for basically employees, and I can't have I can't put specific IPs.
No, the way it would work, it's called an access control list or ACL. Many routers can do this. I take it you don't want the public to use your Wi-Fi, but you'd like your employees to continue to use it when they're at work.
Right, yeah. I need to restrict, need the Wi-Fi to be open.
You do it by MAC address. And what you can do, again, this depends on the router, but many routers, you can say, okay, I want Wi-Fi access to be open during the day. After 5 p.m., only these MAC addresses can use the Internet. Then an employee would have to register their computer or phone to use your Wi-Fi. Everybody else, sorry, it's not working.
Oh, okay, great.
But that's something to look for in a router. You want a router that supports access control or has ACL. I used to do it on my Apple AirPort router. The ASUS router I currently use is really amazing. It supports it, the ASUS 3200. But I suspect because you have Wi-Fi for your customers, you probably have some sort of commercial setup, right?
They're Netgear routers mostly.
I would take a look and see. Netgear is very good. It's probably the difference between a consumer grade and a not pro, but prosumer grade, you're looking for an access control list. Many routers will do exactly what you just described. If your router can't, then you need to get a different router. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That sound, bump to bump, means it must be Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru time. Scott is the host of Home Theater Geeks, a great podcast for people interested in home theater. I mean, if you're really interested, at twit.tv/HTG. He's also the editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great.
Good.
What do you got for us? What do you want to talk about today? The world is your oyster.
Thank you. The world is my oyster. I always get a bunch of emails. I'm happy to respond to as many as I can. And I'm starting to get a bunch of questions about which HDR TV to buy.
Yes, I have that question.
Well,
It
is time, I think. HDR, high dynamic range, as I've said on this show many times, is a quantum leap in picture quality. It's much better than anything we've had so far. And there are now a number of TVs that have it. And in fact, I posted a couple weeks ago now on AVS Forum a list of all the TVs that are HDR capable.
Ah.
And I make the distinction between HDR compatible and HDR capable. HDR compatible to me means basically, it can accept an HDR signal, but it doesn't say anything about what the light coming off the screen is. And it may very well be there are TVs out there that take an HDR signal and compress it down to standard dynamic range.
Oh.
So you don't
want
a TV
one where we see HDR on the screen is what we
correct.
Want
and that's yeah. what I call HDR capable.
Right.
And so I made a list of HDR capable TVs from 2015 and 2016. There are a couple that might have been earlier, but I really wanted this list to be for people who are shopping for a TV now. And you know, I've said on this show many times, 4K, maybe it's too early. You might want to wait. Well, it's starting to get to the point where I say you don't have to wait anymore. Because
so
of this
the
HDR.
spring editions are out. The spring models.
Well,
are
the
out.
2016s, a few of them are out. They're going to start coming out more and more into the in the first half of this year.
And you believe this is really worth it? This is
oh,
an
yeah.
upgrade that's worth getting a new TV for.
No question.
Right.
No question. Absolutely. And so Max Anderson wrote me and said, what HDR TVs are currently available in the market today from Samsung? And that's a good question because Samsung probably has the largest slate of HDR capable TVs currently with the 2015s and the 2016s that are on their way. They're coming out pretty soon. So I'm particularly interested in the Samsung JS8500, which is, in fact, the answer to another question that I got, which is a friend of mine is looking for a new TV. Picture quality is key. Wants a 75-inch for around $3,000 or a 65-inch for around $2,000. Now, the Samsung JS8500 is almost exactly at Amazon and a bunch of places about $2,000. And it's a 65-inch. Has this HDR capability. JS8500, by the way, is a model line designation, and it comes in various sizes. But the 65-incher is right around $2,000. So that is very, very nice TV, HDR capable. There is some HDR content coming out on streaming in particular, but now that we have the Ultra HD Blu-ray, Samsung, again, made the first HD Blu-ray, Ultra HD Blu-ray player. It's now available. There are some titles that are available you can buy on disc. And over 100 by the end of the year, so we're told. So this is an up-and-coming thing. It's an important thing and something that I'm really happy to see happening.
If you buy a UHD premium,
mm-hmm.
are you going to get UHD capable?
Is that HDR?
I mean, say HDR. You're going to get a TV that lives up to what you're just describing.
Yes, exactly. In fact, it's called it's from the UHD Alliance, and it's a certification. It's a kind of a specification, but it's a certification called Ultra HD Premium. And what that says is, if you're going to get the Ultra HD Premium logo, if you get the put it on your TV, you have to pass certain tests.
Right.
And those tests all have to do with high dynamic range.
Right.
So will the TV be able to output a certain minimum peak brightness? And will it be able to reproduce a certain minimum black level, dark black level? Because high dynamic range has to do with the brights are brighter and the blacks are blacker.
Yeah.
So it's a wider range of luminance levels. Also, will it be able to reproduce a certain range of colors greater than the range of colors we currently have in our existing high definition TV system?
Is there content though for this stuff?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Where do I get that?
Netflix. You can get it on Netflix. They have several shows that are high dynamic range.
Okay.
Amazon Instant Video is another one.
Really?
Vudu is another one.
Okay.
MGo, which is actually, I think, owned by Samsung, or at least they have some relationship.
But you'd probably want to get one of these new Blu-ray players too, right? These
ideally,
UHD.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And are those out?
Yes, they are. You can buy them at Best Buy, Amazon. They might be backordered. You might have to wait a little while for the back order to get filled, but they are out. And the even better part, this first generation of Ultra HD Blu-ray players, $400. Now that's not insignificant amount of money, but when the first Blu-ray players came out over 10 years ago, they were $1,000.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So, we're in a new era here, and it's actually more affordable than the beginning of the previous new era.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? So that's interesting. All right.
Yeah, I think it's really great.
Should one, this article, by the way, read the article on AVS Forum, because it goes into a lot more detail. There's other standards like this Dolby Vision. And
exactly. That's one form of HDR. And another.
So it's kind of complicated.
It is a little bit complicated.
HDR 10, there's Dolby Vision, and there's UHD Premium.
But and a lot of people confuse those. Dolby Vision and HDR 10 are different HDR, high dynamic range, formats or systems.
Would anything that supported UHD Premium support those other two?
UHD Premium is a certification that says it meets the display.
Well, I'm looking at Samsung, for instance. Many Samsung TVs are HDR 10, but not Dolby Vision.
Dolby Vision, right. So UHD Premium only says the TV will reach this maximum brightness and this minimum black and this range of colors.
Yeah.
It doesn't say which HDR system it will use. It doesn't. That doesn't matter. So Samsung only uses HDR 10. Vizio only uses Dolby Vision. LG uses both.
Yeah. I'm looking at the LG OLEDs. Of course, they're very pricey, but those do HDR 10, Dolby Vision, and ultra high.
And they are Ultra HD premium certified. Yeah, exactly. So they do it all, and they're very expensive.
Yeah,
those are the ones to beat, really. Okay. If you've got the money, then they're the ones to beat.
If you have $8,000 for the 65-inch LG.
I'm actually looking forward to reviewing the bottom of the line LG OLED, because they say all of their image quality is the same. It's just difference in features. Yeah.
Oh, so get the bottom of the line. How much cheaper is that?
I don't know the pricing yet. I don't think they've announced it.
$6,500.
It's obviously a lot. Going to be a lot less.
Well, not obviously. Okay, so the panels are the same. It's really about features. That's good to know.
Exactly.
That's a little trick there. You'll find Scott at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. Look for that article if you want to know more. And, of course, twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Zonk. I wanted to tell you, Leo, that there is finally a Dolby Vision theater in the Bay Area.
Oh, good. Where's that?
It's not very close to you, unfortunately. It's in Fremont.
Oh, please.
It's down near San Jose.
Well, when I go to pick up my Tesla, I'll go to a movie, too.
There you go. Go to a movie.
Yeah.
But it is. It's
Fremont.
In actually. Yeah.
Who wants to go to Fremont?
Well, anybody wants to see this Dolby Vision. Yeah.
It's not exactly the hub of the South Bay, is it? No.
No, I don't think so.
No,
but
it's
the first Dolby Vision theater in the Bay Area. Hopefully, there'll be another one soon closer to you. I really want you to go see.
What's the chain?
AMC.
AMC. Well, we've got plenty of AMC theaters around.
Yeah, but only 14 around the country so far are converted to Dolby Vision.
Huh.
And this one is called the New Park 12.
Yeah.
It's in the New,
Park. It's a mall theater.
It's a mall theater, yes. But one of their auditoria is the AMC multiplexes often have one theater called Prime.
Yeah.
And so what AMC is doing is taking their Prime locations, their Prime auditoria, and converting them into Dolby Vision, Dolby Cinema theaters, actually. And this is the first one in the Bay Area to do that.
This portion of the Tech Guy Show has nothing to do with that song. Scott, would you stick around for a second? Because we do have we have a home theater question. I think you might be better equipped to answer this one than
Happy to.
All right. Greg is on the line from San Jose, California. Good news, Greg. You can go to Fremont and see an HDR movie. One of the 12 theaters in the country is in Fremont.
That's right. 14, actually.
Kind of close to me. I'm in North San Jose.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. So, what's your question?
Go see Zootopia there.
Yeah, go see Zootopia.
Okay. I have a pretty good quality TV. It's a Pioneer Profit 150 FD.
Nice.
Scott.
I need to place a wireless HDMI connection because right now my wire's outside the wall and it's pretty ugly. So, recommendation for something that would go with a TV of that quality.
Sure. Well, my first recommendation is from a company called DVDO, and they make a wireless HDMI system called Air 3, I think, is their current generation. And it basically consists of a transmitter and a receiver, and you connect the transmitter via HDMI to the source, typically, say, your AV receiver, or your directly to your source, like your Blu-ray player or your streamer. And then the receiver connects by HDMI to the HDMI input on the TV. And that can be hidden behind something or another. So it's not, you know, kind of obvious. Now, the DVDO Air uses a 60 gigahertz band in the wireless spectrum. And that needs to be line of sight. I take it back. You can't hide the receiver or the transmitter behind things. They have to be able to see each other because this 60 gigahertz is so high frequency that it needs line of sight. And it can't go from one room to another. So if you're thinking about saying, oh, well, I've got a source in this room and I got the TV in this other room, I'll just be able to beam through walls, not with the DVDO. That needs to be in room only. But it does have very high quality and should work for you beautifully.
Okay. Is there one maybe that wouldn't be line of sight?
I'm trying to look for one right now, and I think Belkin used to make one. I'm not sure if they still do. I can't. Let me do a little research on that, and I'll put some. Send the info to Leo. He can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the website at techguylabs.com.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is where a good home installer is going to know all the market products on the market, and
exactly.
You know, you have
a very
fancy TV. Might be time to go to an installer and get him to set that all up if you don't want to see any wires.
That's exactly right. And boy, that Pioneer.
Is that a nice TV?
Plasma. It's a plasma. It's one of the last Kuros.
Yeah. Ooh,
beautiful. I mean, it doesn't do 3D, it doesn't do high dynamic range.
So I still have my 70 inch Viera in the living room. That's my plasma. And I'm wondering, is it maybe time to look at replacing that with the maybe the big LG OLED and go?
Oh, man. If you could get the big OG LG OLED. That would be just so
the
awesome.
The plasma's nice. I wouldn't get rid of the plasma. I just
No, absolutely
not. Put it
not.
In another room.
Because your bedroom TV.
No. Yeah, we have a rule. No TV in the bedroom.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good rule.
Yeah.
That's a good
rule. We have TVs everywhere else. That's why. So, I have the original OLED, the Samsung OLED is in my office. It's a smaller one, 55 inches. Mm-hmm. But I love that so much, and I'm pretty close to it, so I don't see myself replacing that just yet.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either if I were you. Now, it's not high dynamic range, but it still achieves that super deep black.
It really looks good. Yeah.
And it looks great, I'm sure.
All right, Scotty, thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll check in next week with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. We're going to get back to the phones here in just a second. Stacy San Pedro, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I started out with one question, and while I was waiting, I sort of almost got that answered, I guess. The initial question was having to do with whether or not a Chromebook could do office functionality. Well, it turns out I have got Google Docs this thing now.
That's the way to do it. It won't run. A Chromebook is running a different operating system than Windows, so it won't run Windows software. So, for instance, Microsoft Office, you can't use Excel. But Google has been for years kind of working its way up to giving you full functionality on the Chromebook. And Google Docs, which includes a spreadsheet program, they call it Sheets. It's not as good as Excel. Excel's like the king, but it'll do a lot of what you need to do. Depends how fancy you want to get. You're not doing pivot tables, are you?
No. It turns out I'm so used to a desktop as opposed to a laptop that I'm finding sort of frustrating to try and get into being efficient with a laptop. But at any rate...
Partly that's the trackpad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, get a mouse. Yeah. You can plug a mouse into the side of that.
That's what I was thinking.
Or even a wired one. It'd make it so much more like your desktop that I think it would help you make that transition. Because a trackpad is a big jump, big leap.
Okay, so a corresponding question is, do you have any specific recommendations as to a good quality but not necessarily pricey cloud printer? My printer right now says it won't work as a cloud printer.
Yeah, and most new wireless printers support what's called Google Cloud Print. That's the technology Google uses to allow you to print from your Chromebook anywhere. So you can be on the road. As long as you're online, you can print to your home printer. There are many companies that make these. Of course, our sponsor Epson makes excellent ones, and they make some inexpensive ones. I'm trying to think of the Epson Artisan is the wireless one that supports cloud print, the Artisan. But Canon makes them. Those are my two favorites. Do you do any photo printing or is it just plain paper text?
Mostly just office kinds of things.
Yeah. I know Epson's a sponsor, so I'll give you a disclaimer, but they're my favorite. So I would go out and get an Epson wireless printer. Almost all of them. In fact, as far as I know, all of the wireless printers support cloud print out of the box. And you can decide if you want an all-in-one, like one that does faxing and copying and scanning, or if you just want a plain old printer.
Anyway, I really appreciate your show, and thank you very much, Leo.
My great pleasure, Stacy. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. I hope that helps. I think a Chromebook is a great choice for almost anyone now. We've been, for a long time, buying more complicated computers than we need to, mostly because we didn't have a choice. You know, it was a Windows or a Mac PC, and that was it. But there's a lot of complexity built into what we call a general-purpose operating system. In order to make a computer capable of doing anything, you have to add a lot of features that most people never end up using. So a Chromebook is so much simpler, less expensive, and because of the design, more secure, much less likely to get viruses, much more securable than a desktop PC, a general Windows or Mac PC, that I think it's a really good choice for almost everybody. Unless you have some specialized software that you have to run, you should absolutely look at a Google Chromebook. They're fabulous. All right, we're taking a break, top of the hour, but back with more of your calls right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Now,
Mr. UHD Premium, Scott Wilkinson.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah, whoops.
I've been doing a little research here on wireless HDMI, and I found another one. I found a couple more, actually, other than the DVD-O. One is, and the one that's probably more well-known, certainly more well-known, is from IO Gear. And I'm just looking to see if that one uses the really high bandwidth or, nope, it uses 5.1 to 5.8 gigahertz. So that one would be not line of sight. So let's make sure that we get that in the show notes. I'll send you, or should I send it to James DeRuvo maybe? It's the IO Gear GWHD11 for about $230. So that should do it as well, and be, and these are all 1080p, by the way. They're not 4K and they're not HDR, but the fellow who called had a Pioneer Plasma, which is 1080p, not HDR, nothing like that. So either of these would work just fine. The IO Gear, I mean, the DVD-O, I think, is more expensive. It's closer to $400, I think. I'll have to look at that. Another company I found called Nyrius, Nyrius. Never heard of them before. They're about in the same price range, $250, and they operate in the same band, that is the 5 gigahertz band. So that would not be line of sight either. So that's about the size of that. TX Traveler, have you heard of anybody using VR goggles for big screen TV replacement or projector replacement? If so, how do they perform? This is, in my view, for me, it's the most important application of VR as it relates to movies and TV and so on. Because I still don't know. And I'm going to NAB next month, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk about this. So I hope to learn a lot about it. But as far as I know right now, making a movie in VR is very problematic, because a movie, by its nature, you want to be looking, the director is focusing your attention on something, right? And so if they're trying to focus your attention on something in front of you and you're going, hey, look what's behind me, then you're defeating the purpose of the movie. You're missing what the director wants you to see. Now, for games, of course, it's brilliant. It's exactly right. Or maybe, you know, virtual travel. There are all sorts of applications for VR that are cool. But in terms of making a movie in VR, I don't see it. Now, taking some VR goggles and duplicating or replicating, emulating a screen in front of you where you can watch a movie, and you can have a 100-inch screen, a 200-inch screen, at whatever size you want, in these little VR goggles, that to me is very compelling. It is isolating, though, and that bothers me. I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. Well, I know how I feel about it. I don't like it. You know, everybody in the room having their own goggles on, and they're completely isolated from everybody else. That's a bit of a problem for me. But, you know, if you're on a plane or something like that, I've heard of this being used on airplanes. You know, if you want to watch a movie on an airplane and you don't want to look at that funky little screen in the seat back in front of you, or even your iPad or tablet or whatever, you can simulate a really big screen experience by putting on a set of goggles. And on a plane, isolation is probably a good thing. So I haven't done a lot of research into this. So I don't really, I can't speak from personal experience, but it is certainly an interesting idea. And if they get high enough resolution, I think they would perform very well. Ooh, here's a good question from Quite Dead. I wonder how the newly released UHD movies with HDR will look on non-HDR UHD sets. This is a very good question. And I've been talking with Samsung about this lately, too, because they have, as I said before, the UHD Blu-ray player. And they did a demonstration at CES where they played an HDR title on the Blu-ray player, and they sent it to a non-HDR UHD set. So it had UHD resolution, but it did not have high dynamic range capability. And It did look better, I think. I mean, it's now a couple months ago, so it's a little hard to remember. But generally speaking, it will look better, even though it's getting what's called tone mapped from HDR down to SDR, standard dynamic range and standard color gamut. But by doing that, you can get some improvement over what you would get if you just sent the Blu-ray straight across. This has to do with the whole concept of if you start with something more than you can do and you then bring it down to what the capabilities of the TV are, you get a better result than if you just send something straight ahead of what the TV is capable of doing. This is the idea behind, for example, Sony's Blu-rays that say mastered in 4K. So they mastered the movie on these particular Blu-rays in 4K, and then at the very end of the process, they brought it down to 1080p. And that is a better result. That gives you a better result, no question about it, than if you mastered in 1080p, if you just kept it 1080p all the way through the process. So starting with something more than you can do, and then at the very end, putting it down into what you can do is a better solution, and that's the answer to that question. It's gonna be a better experience. It's not gonna be as good as really seeing HDR, but it's gonna be better than you could get otherwise. maybe Curtis B. Maybe Hollywood would like the fact that you would get distracted with things to the sides. You'd have to watch and pay to watch the movie multiple times to see everything. Very good. Flashpoint Cubed can broadcast TV handle a 60 frames per second playback, meaning can Fios play 60 FPS broadcasts? Broadcast TV cannot handle 60 frames per second in ATSC, which is over the air, or cable or satellite. I don't know about Fios. That one is a question for me that I'll have to research. I don't know if Fios can do that, but generally speaking, broadcast cannot. Golems is talking about a Rocketfish product, wireless over home power line. Well, if it's over home power line, it's probably not wireless because it's going over a wire, right? But it is avoiding the HDMI cable. So that might be another thing worth looking at. Let me just take a quick look here. Rocketfish. Whole home HD extender. So that, it's another solution. It's not exactly wireless, but it does avoid the wires of HDMI, so it might actually work. I'll have to look at that. That's good. Thank you, Curtis.
You still have wire from the power line.
Yeah, exactly. You still have wires.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, how are you today? It's time to talk about computers and the internet. Home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. I love talking tech, and I love doing it with you. So give me a ring, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's our phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Mark is on the line. Well, he's using Skype, I guess, because he's calling from Sydney, Australia. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Leo. Absolutely using Skype, and hopefully I've got a nice and simple question for you as well.
All right.
Now, for many, many years, I was using the same password for every website I went to.
So was I. I was using, believe it or not, monkey, the word monkey. The worst password, and in fact, when I look at password lists now, it's often in the top 10.
Sometimes, that's crazy.
Sometimes people want to make it harder, so they go monkey 123.
I guess you could say that password was bananas, but anyway.
It was. But remember, this kind of all snuck up on us, you know, inch by inch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then I heard you talking about LastPass.
Yes.
So that's been my, like, favorite go-to password manager for many years. One of the things which I really love about it is I can access it via, like, multiple computers on a secure website.
That's what I really, like about really it, too. Cool. Yeah, I think that's one of its best features. Yeah.
Although, with work, I've just done the one password, and I've got a free license for it, which is really cool. Obviously, normally you need to pay for it, but I'm lucky with one of the places that I work for. But the interface for it is really, really awesome, especially if, like, if you're using a Mac.
Yeah, let me. This is a great. So these are the kind of the kings of password vaults. So let me talk about why you want to use a password vault, and then there is one difference between 1Password and LastPass that might incline you. You know, user interface aside, I like LastPass isn't as pretty as 1Password, but it does do autofilling very well in a lot of environments like Android. 1Password came from the Apple side, the Mac side, and it doesn't quite do it as well on the Android. But I don't hold that against them. But let me talk about there is a significant kind of security difference between the two that I will talk about. So first of all, what is a password vault? The idea simply is, as you point out, having 1Password for all websites is a bad idea, especially as we start to see websites get breached. Your password might leak out. And then what does a bad guy do? Well, they say, hey, I got his password. And they try it on every site. And still, to this day, most people use 1Password because it's easier. 1Password at a time for all sites. Don't do that. You should have a unique password. And ideally, a long, random password that's a mix of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation. In other words, something totally unmemorable. Well, that, Leo, that's a terrible idea. How am I supposed to memorize? I have hundreds of passwords. What? So you keep them in a password vault. You let the password vault remember them. You can even let the password vault generate them, and it'll do a better job than you do. And then you only have to remember 1Password. That's the magic password that unlocks the vault. Now, it does create a very, very dangerous single point of failure. If somebody were to get into your vault, they'd get everything. But that's going to be true no matter what you do. If you have a notebook, if you use the same password on every site, whatever it is, you know, there's some vulnerabilities there. And it's better to use these nice, long, strong passwords and have a password vault that is secured properly. And in my opinion, both LastPass and 1Password do a good job of this. But you nailed it when you mentioned the fact that LastPass lets you log into their website and get your password. And the reason is LastPass stores your encrypted, your scrambled password vault on their servers. 1Password does not. And that is a significant difference. Now, admittedly, they're in both cases strongly encrypted. But remember, if a bad guy were to get all of these password vaults somehow, or break into LastPass, download the password vaults, and have kind of an infinite amount of time to bang on them, some of them would be broken into. And that's scary because every password's in there. If you didn't have a really good password on your password vault, if you had Monkey123 unlocking your password vault, that password vault were somehow stolen by a bad guy, you'd be in trouble because that's one of the first things he'd guess. And now all your passwords are available.
Yep.
So it's a theoretical vulnerability, but it is a vulnerability. And it makes it more convenient. But they store the password on their site. With 1Password, you're required to figure out how you want to get your password vault onto other devices. You can use Dropbox. That's probably even less secure than storing it on LastPass, but you don't have to. They have Wi-Fi sync. What I do with 1Password is I store my password vault on a local cloud storage solution that I own and use, and it's in my house. And so it's encrypted, and it's not. A bad guy would have to break into my house to get it. So that is, in my opinion, somewhat more secure. But a lot of people don't want to go through that, and I think that's a theoretical vulnerability and not a real vulnerability. I think LastPass is very well secured. Their servers are well secured. Joe Segrist, the guy who wrote LastPass, is a wizard and really did a good job in every respect. So I think you could use either one with impunity. But there is a significant technical difference between them that for a hardcore security person might say, I don't want that password vault stored anywhere that I don't control. So now, is that answer, you know, your question? That's a significant thing.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, certainly one of the things I like is having that flexibility. So if I go to a work computer, I can actually...
It's all there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Versus what I'm finding with 1Password is I don't quite have that same level of flexibility.
Right.
Although, having said that, I can manually enter the password, so it might not be the end of the world, but it just adds a little bit of extra time to the process.
But these are exactly the right questions. And there is a trade-off between security and convenience. We know that. The more convenient, the more easier to use often means less secure. This is a good example. It is much more convenient for LastPass to store your password vault. It's technically less secure.
Yeah.
Is that an issue? I don't think so, because I trust LastPass to secure their systems. But you are having to trust them a little bit
exactly.
more. With one password, you can keep that vault to yourself, secure it somewhere, synchronize it via Wi-Fi, which is a good way to do it. So your phone gets within range of your home system. It will update the passwords. If you don't change passwords a lot or don't sign up for a lot of new sites, that's a good system. I think it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Pick the one that you like the best, that works the best for you. I've used both of them on a regular basis. I've tried every one of them because I want to make sure that I'm up to date on which one. I won't say which one I use as my personal choice because I don't want to sway anybody. But I would say you'd be fine with either one of those.
But the one thing I'll say to everyone is, like, remember, don't use the same password for everything.
Right. Yeah. And
one thing.
That's a terrible thing to do. And both 1Password and LastPass have validation. You know, they have a security check that you can run. And that's one of the things they'll warn you about. And they'll warn you. They'll say, hey, you know, you're using this password on 3 other sites. Do you think you really should? And that's a great thing to at least make you think about that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, I'm so glad you're listening in Sydney, one of my favorite towns in the world. I love it.
It was good when you were down here. We
had a good time.
Yeah. Well.
Time to go back, I think.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mark. Great to talk to you.
Cool. Thanks for
you. Yeah, I appreciate it. I hate to get too much into the weeds on these because any password vault is better than nothing, basically. What you're doing right now, if you're not using a password vault, is the most dangerous, either writing it down, putting it on a post-it note on your computer, or more likely using the same password over and over again. That's what most of us do. And that is not safe. That is really not safe. So that's why I don't care what password vault you use, any password vault is going to be a massive improvement in your security. We're going to get past this. This is a temporary. Passwords are a bad idea. Everybody agrees. Everybody's looking at ways to get around this. It's all about authentication, isn't it? It's all about proving you are who you say you are. And there are better and better ways to do this, including fingerprints and things like that. This will be just a bad memory soon. But for now, get a password vault. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by PillPack. Where's my PillPack? Oh, I love my PillPack. This is such a good idea. You don't have to pack those pills in the pill carriers anymore. This is a better pharmacy, an online pharmacy that sends you your medications, your over-the-counter drugs, your vitamins. In this, the PillPack box, it's so cool. What they do with PillPack is they have these robots that pack the box. And so your PillPack contains all your prescriptions in this box. And they're carefully measured out, so you don't have to pack them. Oh, I got a new one. So it says, here's your new pill pack. Look what's on the side. It says your name, the date, what your medications are, pictures of them. That's important so you can identify them. Your doctor's dosage instructions. And then as the day goes by, here's 8 a.m. Saturday. This is what's in here. Here's the date. If you tear it off, you take your pill. You never have to wonder, did I take my 8 a.m. pills or not? It's great for travel. You just tear off the pills, packs you need for your travel. I love this idea. And they're a full pharmacy. They work with most insurance. Of course, they'll verify that your insurance qualifies before they transfer your prescriptions over. There is a pharmacist on call 24/7, which I really like. So you can always talk to a pharmacist or email them. No more embarrassing conversations in the drugstore. Well, you apply that topically on the affected area. You can ask them on the phone now. And by the way, if you get inhalers or other things that can't fit in the pill pack, they'll send those to you as well. Of course, it's a full service pharmacy, but it's different. It's better. And they even proactively contact your doctor and arrange refills so you'll never run out. Shipping is always free. You just pay your normal copay. Every packet checked by the pharmacist for accuracy and interactions. That's really good. In fact, it's really good to get all your vitamins and your medications in through PillPack, because that way they can, because vitamins sometimes interact with medications. They want to know the whole thing. Here's what I want you to do. Go to PillPack.com/twit and sign up now. It's a gorgeous site. Really well done. There'll be no question marks. They'll tell you exactly how it's going to work. And when you do this, when you use our link and transfer your prescriptions over to PillPack, you're going to get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and over-the-counter medications free. They even have a PillPack app to remind you on the iPhone and the Apple Watch. Top 25 inventions of 2015, according to Time Magazine. Jill Duffy gave it her editor's choice on PC Magazine. It is so cool. PillPack.com/twit. Sign up today and get $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to take more of your calls at 8888-ASK. Leo, it's interesting to think about passwords. It's not, I'm thinking you never had passwords, right? Maybe when, like in the speakeasy, you'd knock, what's the password? Swordfish. And they'd let you in. You had to remember your home phone number. As a kid, I remember I had to memorize my phone number, locker combination. But this whole idea of like hundreds of passwords I got to remember, this is new to the human experience. This never happened before. And so we're not very good at it. We shouldn't be. I mean, that's crazy because a good password is by definition unmemorable. The more memorable your password is, the less likely that it's a good password. The best password is long and totally random. And a mix of upper and lower and numbers and punctuation, like gobbledygook, 16 characters of gobbledygook. You can't remember that. And if you can, and a lot of people say, oh, well, I just use my pet's name and my birth date. That's not a good password. You might think it is, but you got to remember, bad guys are very good. They're good at what they do. Back to the phones we go. On the line from Los Angeles, Marley. Hi, Marley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Speaking about bad guys, first I'll start out with my goal is a divorce. So here's my question, unfortunately, too common.
I'm so sorry. First of all, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Hey.
It's never a happy thing, no matter what kind of jerk he is. It's never a happy thing. But go ahead.
Okay. So my significant other has an iPhone 6.
Yeah.
And I would like to be able to put a tracking device, a stealth tracking device. And I everything that I read, I need to jailbreak it, et cetera, et cetera. But
he'd know if you jailbroke it, unless he's a complete...
Yeah, he's pretty stupid. He's pretty stupid. So,
what's wrong with my phone? It's so strange.
Yeah, we travel both internationally, so it's got to be able to be all over the globe.
Yeah.
So, with that said, what program would be the least likely to him notice? Because again, stealth, and I would love to be.
Remember, you're swimming upstream here because Apple has, with every update to the iPhone, made it harder and harder to do this. Mm-hmm. They really want your phone to be private. Having said that, by its very definition, a smartphone is the ultimate surveillance vehicle, right? Because it's got GPS, so you can follow somebody around. I presume, if you can get into his phone, the first thing to do is turn on Find My iPhone. And,
right.
And that way you'll know exactly where it is all the time, because the phone's beaconing out where it is all the time. That will give you his location. What more do you want?
I want to be able to listen to calls.
Who owns this phone? You or him?
We both own it.
Okay.
We both.
There's a legal morass here. I mean, if he were the clear owner, then you would be violating the law to modify the phone. If you both own it, maybe that's not so unclear. You're an owner, so you can modify it. That's why I think Find My iPhone would be easy. Listening to his calls. Well, and seeing keystrokes, that is something that Apple absolutely prevents you from doing. That's why you have to jailbreak it. But jailbreaking by itself may not even be enough. All jailbreaking does is allow you to download apps that Apple doesn't offer in its app store, some of which are probably surveillance apps. I am not an expert on this, so I wouldn't know where to point you on this in this case. But without a doubt, without in some way really modifying the phone, you'd have a hard time putting surveillance information on it. Boy, this is an interesting question on a lot of levels. I mean, it is illegal, of course, to do this. Unless you own the phone, you can do anything you want to a phone you own. Listening into phone audio, that's going to be really tough. I'd be very surprised if you could do that. You could. Location's easy, because that's the phone is beaconing that out anyway. You could probably follow what he's doing with his messaging app if he's on your account. I know that because I was getting my son's text messages for a long time because, you know, he was just signed into my iCloud account on his iPhone. And, of course, that means I see all his text messages. Somebody's mentioning something called Web Watcher. Uncle Bick, who's a very reliable regular in our chat room, says Web Watcher. Is that for that's computer and mobile monitoring software. I doubt very much. Well, it does say it works on iPhone. But I think, yeah, you'd probably have to jailbreak this. Now, this would allow you to watch what they're doing on the web. It says monitor iOS activity, begin recording each and every time the device backs up to the iCloud. So this is, by the way, a well-known vulnerability that everybody should know about. Apple's essentially admitted to this in this recent court case against the Department of Justice over the San Bernardino shooter's phone, is that they have access to iCloud backups, full and complete. They have the key to that. So I would presume this in some way involves you sharing an iCloud password with your soon-to-be ex. Yeah, you know what this looks like? It'll do it. Webwatcher.com. I can't say I condone it. I don't know the details. I don't want to get in the middle of this. You should remember that some of this might be illegal if it's not your phone. If you jointly own it, well, that's an interesting question. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. And now you can see, by the way, the reason I took this call is you can see why Apple wants to lock this stuff down and why they're so reluctant to help law enforcement, because it begins this slippery slope where, well, you say, okay, we can write that software, and then you write that software. Now, having done that, that software exists, and everybody knows that you have the ability to do it. And it's not long before you not only hear from other law enforcement agencies, but from divorce attorneys and others who say, oh, well, since we know you can do that, would you do it for this phone and this phone and this phone? And then, the notion of privacy is very much attacked because you put so much on that phone. Now, you might raise the issue, and if I'm a bad guy, I'm probably not carrying an iPhone. If I'm carrying a phone, I'm carrying a dumb burner phone that doesn't have all these capabilities and is not tied to my identity, and I destroy it regularly. Wait a minute, I saw that on The Wire. That was 20 years ago. A smartphone is a very bad idea for a bad guy because it's the perfect surveillance device. But I completely understand why Apple says, and this is Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, said this very explicitly. Look, this doesn't end with this phone. This opens a Pandora's box of all sorts of people saying, well, I want to see into this phone. Oh, my husband's cheating on me. I want to see into this phone. How do I do that? And suddenly you have no privacy whatsoever. And for them, that's bad for business. It means they sell fewer smartphones. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Thomas is next. When we come back, he wants to talk about something called eSight, a special kind of eyewear, of glasses. We're living in a world that's about to explode with these virtual reality helmets and these augmented reality glasses. It's a very interesting time, isn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and he is Johnny Jet. He's been everywhere. He's our traveling dude, hundreds of thousands of miles a year, and he uses technology to make travel better. That's what he comes here every week to talk about. Where are you right now?
I am in rainy, actually, the sun just came out for a second, in Santa Clara, California.
Ah, my neck of the woods. You're in the Silicon Valley.
Yep, I'm speaking at the Santa Clara Convention Center in 2 hours. If anyone's in the hood,
what are you going to talk about?
How to travel like a rock star. It's what I've been given in D.C., Chicago, New York Times travel show. So I've been on a circuit.
That's nice.
And,
that's great.
And now I'm in Northern California.
That's great. Well, since you're on the phone with us, let's talk about travel. I've got all my travel for the next 2 years booked.
Do you really?
Well, yeah, the stuff that we like to do, we're doing a river cruise, right? And
which one?
Well, okay, so I guess I can give them a plug. I have actually not given them an endorsement because I haven't traveled on them, but there's a company called Tauk, T-A-U-C-K.
Well, they're the best.
Yeah, they're like really, they've been around 100 years. They're like, they do all kinds of tours, but they have riverboat cruises, and you have to book it 2 years in advance if you want to get on it. It's so popular.
They do.
So I've told my travel agent, we have a wonderful travel agent, Jane, at the travel store in your neck of the woods down Southland. And I said, Jane, I don't care how far ahead you have to book. And she said, well, you're on September 2017. You'll be gone.
Wow. This should be some kind of last minute cancellation.
They haven't even, let me put it this way, they haven't even set the prices. But I did have to give them a deposit. They say, but if you don't like, if for any reason you want to cancel, the deposit is fully refundable. But you have to kind of commit.
Well, I've done a Tauk tour before.
Have you? Are they good? I hope they're good.
Not a river cruise, but yeah. I did a Hall of Fame.
Oh, that was the Cooperstown thing you did. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm actually doing one with them next month. I'm taking my dad to the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, what fun. Well, I'll give you a report in a year, and a half.
You should be able to get on some kind of last minute cancellation.
I think there is, but we have certain wants and needs. You know, we want this trip, we want it this time, and all of that stuff. So we're very finicky. If we were more, you always say this: the more flexible you are, the better.
Exactly.
But this is when the kids are out of school, and you know, and we want to go. We're doing the south of France, and it's just a certain. River cruise we wanted to do. So.
Yep. Well, Natalie and I did that last year. We're actually going on a river cruise in a couple of weeks.
I like UniWorld. That was the one you sent me on last time. They were good.
Yes.
Too. Yeah.
For sure.
River cruising is very different than ocean cruising. A lot of us have done ocean cruising. River cruising is slow and relaxing.
Very slow. Meal times are, you know, prepared. So, you know, they have dinner between 6 and 8. There's not a lot of flexibility.
But there's only 100, 150 people on that boat.
For sure, and you're always close to shore. You don't have to worry about sinking. You don't have to worry about drowning.
You don't have the big Broadway shows on board.
You don't have to worry about getting seasick.
No, that's why Lisa loves it.
You're always close to town. You're always seeing something. You usually have Wi-Fi.
It's fun. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's not great Wi-Fi, but it's free.
Yeah.
Yep. But I do have a cool new website for you
that
I just learned about this week.
Yes.
It's called Cheap Airs. So Cheap Air is an online travel agency like Expedia, but they came out with a pretty clever tool called When to Buy Flights Tool. So if you type in Cheap Air, When to Buy Flights Tool, actually I'll tweet it right now. It will show you when the best time to buy or what they think is a good price.
Well, they have like a graph here.
Exactly. So,
this is the question I asked you the first time I met you. Everybody asks you all the time, I'm sure. How far ahead is the best time to buy an air ticket?
So everyone will tell you, every company will tell you a different
time. That's right. Especially now with everything being computerized.
Exactly. But this is Cheap Air's data. So they've analyzed over 1.3 billion airfares on 8,000 markets. But you put in San Francisco, New York.
Okay.
And then it will tell you the low you'll find is 366. The high is 504. The average. These are averages.
Right.
And they say the best time to buy for this route is between 23 and 92 days in advance.
Yeah.
So what I agree with is that
it really goes up, by the way, in the last couple of weeks, right before you have to go boing.
Usually, but not always.
Oh, interesting.
So they actually say in the very towards the bottom, it tells you the cheapest anyone's ever bought on this route was $73 round trip.
What?
Which is insane. And the most expensive is $29.56.
$2,956?
Yeah, that has to be first class.
And at last minute.
Right. But the $73 round trip, I actually think that was probably JetBlue because they were offering $31 fares.
Yeah.
And I bought one for my sister last year. I was a big spender. But they had, you know, they had a travel deal. And I always talk about people, you know, follow these different airlines, especially JetBlue, on Twitter, because they let you know first there, and they don't, they're not going to last long, these special deals. But anyway, you know, the point of this is that you don't want to buy your airfare tickets, your plane tickets, too far in advance, and you really don't want to wait to the last minute.
Right.
So always analyze. And I'm, you know, I'm speaking at this show, and I just started looking at all different airfares for Thanksgiving for next year. And it's crazy the amount of, you know, the way it's shifting. For Hawaii, it's really expensive already. But for New York, you can buy tickets right now for Thanksgiving peak times for like $160 each way, which is incredible.
We want to go to New York for just to go see some shows, like for 4 days. So this is good information. This is really good information. So
always look. You got to be you got to be flexible. You're not going to get a deal when everyone else is trying to fly.
Right.
And
like spring break.
Spring break, yeah. All the holidays. Yeah. You know, typically the most expensive times to fly are between, you know, 8 or 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. when all the business travelers are trying to head out during the week,
right,
and return 5 to 7 p.m. after their meetings.
Right.
But again, just look at any time. But this is helpful data, so
great, you know, site.
It's worth a look.
It's a long URL, so just Google cheap air and when to buy flights, and it'll take you right to that page.
And I'll put it in the show notes, and I'll tweet it.
Thank
if that
you.
Helps.
Thank you, Johnny Jet. Thank you.
And then do I have time for an app?
You sure do.
So here's an app called It's Easy Passport Renewal and Photo App.
Now's the time, huh?
ITS Easy Passport Renewal and Photo App. So what these guys have partnered with the State Department, and they will allow you to renew your passport without going down to the DMV or going to the post office. You have to pay $29.95 for
it. Oh, I've seen these. These are like passport expediting services, right?
Well, no, but this you do it right on your phone, and you print it up, and you actually, you don't even have to print it up. You just send it away. You put your credit
card.
Oh,
this is cool.
So, you know, they
can you get visas this way too, or is it just for passport, U.S. passport?
This is just for renewing your passport, and they'll ask you information in advance to see if you actually qualify, because you know you can't be too early. You have to make sure that you know
you
didn't
even
lose
take
your passport
picture with your iPhone.
Exactly.
That's
what surprised me the most.
I went down to the drugstore to do it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went to Kinko's one time and spent $15.
Yeah, it was expensive.
But go to Costco, by the way, if you need to go, because usually Costco is cheaper. I think it was $5.95.
This is free. It's easy.
I know.
Passport renewal and photo app.
It's not free. It's $29.95.
Oh, the app is free, but then you pay $30 for the service. Okay, but still.
So not free.
Yeah.
But,
and then there are additional fees from the government.
For sure.
Yeah.
And what I also do like about this app is that, let's say you are overseas and you lose your passport, they have a panic button and it tells you what to do.
That you may laugh, but that happens. We were
for
in
sure.
Paris. My ex-wife left her passport and wallet and everything else in the ladies' loo. We went running back frantically. It was gone. We had tickets to leave the next day. My son and I went back. My ex-wife, Jennifer, had to stay in Paris. Because she had to go to the consulate. She didn't mind. It was like 4 extra days in Paris. It actually wasn't such a punishment, come to think of it.
Well, keep in mind, the passports are usually – they have a value of about $5,000.
Like, she might have planned the whole thing, come to think of it. Johnny Jet, you'll find him at johnnyjet.com. He has a great free travel newsletter. He has lots of information on the website. Follow him on Twitter, at Johnny Jet, Instagram, too. And if you're in Santa Clara, go to the travel show and listen to him speak how to travel like a rock star in a couple of hours. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're feeling all better.
Oh, I'm much better.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. From now on, keep wiping off the use the towel.
Yes.
I think you were right after all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to go back to the phones, answer more of your tech calls right after this. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're taking your calls, talking high tech, as we always do on the weekends. It's fun. I'm glad you're here. Let's see who else we got. Thomas in Stamford, Connecticut. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Uncle Leo. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks for your patience. Thanks for hanging on.
No problem whatsoever. As long as it takes, my friend.
So you want to know about eSight.
Yeah, so these glasses, when I first heard about them from a close friend of mine, he's actually trying to raise money through a GoFundMe page, I heard about them. They're pretty pricey. Wanted to know if you've heard about them before, but
yeah.
These are.
No, you're introducing me to this concept, ESIGHT, okay. And your friend is blind and wants to be able to see.
Yeah, well, he's not totally blind. He's visually impaired, but actually way worse off more than me. I'm legally blind as well.
Yeah. I mean, imagine. So who do they say this is for? Is it, do you have to have some vision, or can you be fully blind?
You have to have some vision.
Okay, so it's some sort of amplification technology.
Right. So from what I hear and from what my friend described, because he tried the demo of these, is think of it as like an Oculus Rift or, well, not that big, but the visor-type band, like, who is that, Jordy from...
Yeah. Well, that's what we're hoping this is, right? Because, but, you know, and there is something similar to this for hearing called a cochlear implant. This is not the same thing.
But
a cochlear implant can take somebody who is profoundly deaf, who has zero hearing, and use an implant and a computer to capture sounds and then stimulate the nerve endings and make a deaf person hear. And it's a miracle. You've probably seen the YouTube videos of people hearing for the first time, and it's remarkable. I do know people who've had cochlear implants, and that's a remarkable technology. This is a little different. These are screens inside these glasses, much as I think you're right to liken it to Oculus Rift, because there's a camera, I would guess, on the glasses, right?
Right. There's a camera on the glasses, and then you have a pack on your belt, and you have the controls on your belt where you can sharpen the image, zoom in, zoom out.
Right.
And when my friend tried them, he could see his wife's face for the first time.
Amazing.
See his son's face.
How much are they?
$15,000.
Wow. Well, here's the good news. Of course they are. This is the first time out of the box. But that technology doesn't sound particularly outrageous, and I imagine the cost of that can drop very quickly, very fast, because it's not such a complicated thing, to be honest. The first time you build something like this, of course, it's very expensive. But the second time, it gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And while I don't think it'll ever be a $500, it certainly will be a lot less. I can imagine in the $1,000 range easily.
Absolutely. I just wanted to bring attention because I know we have a lot of visually impaired listeners on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, take a look at their website, eastsiteeyewear.com.
What's your friend's GoFundMe page? Let's give him a plug.
It's GoFundMe.com/eSight4. Drew, Drew.
Awesome.
And that's it. I just put it in the chat room as well.
Thank you. I see it there.
Yeah, and he's been on news shows in New Hampshire, where he's based in Manchester, and he's been on the local news there. And I'm just trying to help him out any way I can, but also bring attention to these really amazing glasses.
Yeah.
He tells me.
I have somebody in the chat room. Actually, Dr. Mom is saying, and I think she's nailed it. It's very similar to the magnifiers they use for macular degeneration. I have a friend who, you know, with macular degeneration, your eyesight kind of dims from the edges inward, and he was able to continue to use a computer for a long time just by by the end, he was putting one letter at a time on a 27-inch screen, but he could see it and he could read one letter at a time. And so the ability to magnify, to crisp up, to brighten an image can make a big difference in somebody who has limited sight.
I'll say this, for something like this, watching television alone.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's awesome.
Your small 20-inch television becomes an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. So
It's my suspicion that this is not particularly difficult technology, just looking at what they're doing. I don't know anything about it, but I would bet you'll see this become more widely available and the prices drop, especially since a lot of the stuff that's being developed for virtual reality glasses is going to work similarly to this. I can even imagine a time when, you know, you could use a smartphone, the camera on your smartphone, the display on your smartphone, put it in a head-mounted display and do many of the same things.
Yeah,
I think that's possible.
I believe I think because I think this thing is actually still in beta.
Yeah.
They are releasing, I think, a new software patch for it soon where it'll enable the optical stabilization.
Oh, that's so nice, too. Yeah.
So, you know how we have that in the cameras. Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Instead of being all Cloverfield shaky cam.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad Tommy Boy, thank you for calling. That's Tommy's handle in the chat room. Thank you for calling. And
you're quite welcome.
And I hope Drew gets raises the money. And if he does, would you let us know? And we'll get him on the phone to describe his experience.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's been a big leader, big inspiration for me when I was a little kid. I met him at camp, and he's been a big inspiration for me as a little kid, and now I'm grown up. So I'm trying to do anything I can to help him out, and yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you, Thomas. It's GoFundMe.com/ESIGHT, the number 4, Drew, Drew. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, it's good to talk to you. I'll see you in the chat room. Very interesting. There is one for nearsighted folks. My producer, Jason's telling me it's called the Nearsighted app. It works with Google's Cardboard Visor. You know, that's the visor that has, you know, it's very inexpensive. I think the New York Times sent them out for free in the Sunday Times. And it just has a little holder for your phone in the front. It's got a little inexpensive magnifying lenses. You put your phone in there, run the app, and it's doing some of the same thing. If you have a smartphone and you can get some Google Cardboard, which you can get for as little as $15 online, that might be something to take a look at. What an interesting idea. Paul in La Jolla, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well.
For you.
Yeah.
You're talking about Amazon Echo, and there's a new one called Echo Dot.
Oh, yeah. I just ordered my Dot. So,
what are those?
Yeah, what are they? So the Amazon Echo is a black tube, about a foot high. It has a microphone, actually very special array mics on it, which allow you to talk to it across the room. And then it has a speaker on it, and you could do a few things. You can make it a Bluetooth speaker for your phone, so it could be a voice speaker for your smartphone. But you can also ask it questions. I could say, for instance, hey, Amazon, who's the president of the United States?
The U.S. president is Barack Obama.
So that's her response. Very much you've seen it. Probably Siri does it on the iPhone and Google Now. You can ask Google questions on Android devices. One of the things you can do also, though, with it, which is kind of cool, is you can ask it to play music. We gave an Amazon Echo to our older parents, and they love Elvis. So, hey, Amazon, play some Elvis music. Hey, Amazon, play some Elvis music. Sometimes I have to shout to get her
shuffling
attention.
Elvis Presley from Leo's Music Library.
Holy smoke, land sakes alive, I never thought this.
But there's a problem, which is that's not the best speaker in the world. Hey, Amazon, stop. It's not the best speaker in the world. So Amazon's done some interesting things. They got two new devices. One's a portable battery-powered version of this that you could carry around. I don't think that's an interesting product at all because you already have that with your smartphone, and it's better. The other, though, the Dot, it answers this one problem that I have with the Echo. And by the way, I now own four of them. I love this thing so much. Is that it? By the way, I can listen to myself on this, too. Maybe that's why I like it. I can actually have it play my podcasts or the radio show. I could say, hey, Amazon, listen to the tech guy on TuneIn, and it will play my radio show live, which is awesome. So the Dot is everything but the speaker. Actually, it has a small speaker in it. But the idea is you would connect it either via Bluetooth to a powered Bluetooth speaker or by cable, even to your stereo. And now you have a good sound system attached to this thing. And this is something I wanted for a long time. I love the idea of having a stereo that can be controlled with my voice. So I could say, I'm tired of that. Play something else and listen on better quality speakers. So that's the whole idea of the Dot. Right now, the Dot is limited to people who already own an Echo. Amazon doesn't want to do this explanation that I just did. I wasn't talking to you. Oh, she's listening.
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
That's because I wasn't talking to you. That's the problem with these things. They're listening. And sometimes they wake up thinking you were talking to them. I like the idea of the Dot. And if you're already an Echo owner, you can buy it right now, but it won't be delivered until April. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Texture. Do you know about Texture? We've done ads before for their previous name, which was Next Issue. It's the same company, same idea. It is kind of like Netflix for magazines. And it's such a great idea. See, there's still great stuff being written in magazines. I love magazines. A lot of times, people like me, the only time I see a magazine is when I get on an airplane and I stop at the airplane, you know, newsstand, the airport newsstand, and I pick up something. And I always say to myself, well, I ought to read more magazines. But who, frankly, wants the clutter, wants to kill the trees, wants the cost? Well, Texture is a great solution. TexTurE.com/tech guy. You'll be subscribing with one low flat rate to hundreds of the best magazines. And you get the full magazine on your phone, on your tablet, just like it's on the newsstand. In fact, you get back issues and even get bonuses that aren't on the newsstand. You can't do video in a paper magazine, but many of these magazines have things like that. I mean, just National Geographic alone, just getting that every month was always a highlight. My grandma used to give it to me. Now she'd give me Texture. And I'd also get Men's Health and Parents and Sports Illustrated and Wired. All the magazines that you read, including back issues. There's Macworld, PC World, Popular Science, Sound and Vision, Popular Mechanics, Popular Photography, PC Magazine, Smithsonian Magazine. Go to texture.com/tech guy. You can try it for free right now. You can see what it's like. You get all of these magazines. And, you know, there's almost always one article I want to read in Vanity Fair every month, in the New Yorker every month, and GQ and Esquire, Rolling Stone. But I don't want to subscribe to those just for one article a month. Well, now I can get them all. And they look great on the iPad. And you can jump, you know, you look at the front cover and you just do it yourself. Donuts, wow. And I click that and it jumps right to that article. It makes it easy to find articles you care about, even if you don't know what you're looking for, because their editorial team puts together kind of curated sections with deep dives into specific topics that might appeal to you from magazines like Forbes and People and Newsweek. So you don't have to waste time looking for interesting content. Try it free right now. Texture.com/tech guy. If you love Netflix for movies, you'll love Texture for magazines. And yeah, I admit, I like to read the People every once in a while. I don't want to buy People. That's embarrassing. So this way you got it. You don't have to, nobody has to know. Texture.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the number. One of the questions we get a lot, people ask, about Quicken. Are you one of those people that's still using Quicken? They say, when are they going to update Quicken? Well, here's, maybe good news for Quicken users. Intuit has sold Quicken. I just saw this news this morning to an investment group who says, we're going to update it. Intuit really didn't care about Quicken. They bought something called Mint, which is an online kind of financial reporting service that a lot of people use instead of Quicken. And, of course, they're focusing on their moneymaker, their bread and butter, which is QuickBooks. But they didn't really care that much about Quicken, which was one of the first and best checkbook programs for Macintosh and PC. They hadn't updated it in a while. Did you know that Quicken is 33 years old? It's been around a long time. One of the first things people did in the early days of computing is balance their checkbooks. So Intuit has been trying to sell the Quicken division off since August. Quicken, QuickBase, and DemandForce. They wanted to get rid of all three parts because QuickBooks and TurboTax, which is a program I think a lot of you are probably using right around now, are really more profitable because they have cloud-based services. Quicken, which is all about the desktop, just really hasn't been doing that well. In the last 12 months, Quicken contributed about $51 million to the total revenue of Intuit. Now, that seems like a lot of money to me, but when your revenue is $4.2 billion, that's less than 1%. Not worth worrying about. So they bought, they were sold to a company called HIG Capital, which is a private equity firm. You see these companies often buy bits and pieces of other companies for turnaround purposes. They'll polish it up and then they'll resell it. And I presume that's what happens. I hope Quicken's not dead. It doesn't say what they spent on it, but I'm hoping that they'll give it a little TLC, polish it up, because there's still a lot of people who use it. Good news if you're one of them, I think. Tom and Warren, Jerry in Cameron Park, California. Sorry. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Got a quick question for you. I've got an elderly mother who has U-verse cable, and she can't afford the HD service, so she's basically getting standard definition. And currently she has an old Sharp 720 TV, and I was going to replace it for her. So my question is, do I buy her another 720 or do I buy her a 1080 TV? Because the guys at Best Buy say the newer 1080p TVs, the smaller ones, don't upscale. They don't have upscale.
Oh, well, that's a big deal, because if you're watching SD, standard definition television, let's say you're watching The Honeymooners or I Love Lucy, and you blow it up on a big screen TV and it doesn't do upscaling, it looks terrible. It's not worse than it was, but you're just seeing all the ugliness in high resolution. Old TVs smeared it all up, and it didn't really matter. So, yeah, you do want one with an upscaler. Now, you may find that there are other ways to get an upscaler. Your TV tuner, if you're using a tuner or a set-top box, might be doing upscaling. You should check. I don't know what U-versus boxes do. They may have upscaling as well. What comes out of the U-verse box? Is it just red and white? Yellow, red, and white?
No, it's...
cables.
I believe it is. You're right.
Yeah, it's a yellow cable for video. Okay, that's composite video. That's very low-quality video. It's standard definition. You're going to have to find something that'll take that. It may even be that you don't have an adapter. I doubt very much those modern 1080p TVs have composite inputs.
Yeah, but couldn't I take an HDMI output from the cable box, the U-verse box, up to new TV?
Yeah, have you tried that?
Well, I haven't got the TV for her yet.
So that's an interesting question. I mean, if they don't disable that HDMI, then you wouldn't use composite. Yeah.
I can't seem to find an answer on the internet. I've researched the heck out of this.
All right, let me ask the chat room. Anybody have U-verse? Of course, you'd have to. I doubt anybody in the chat room has the low-res version. I mean, I'm sure they have HD on U-verse.
Yeah, I mean, she's on fixed income.
No, I don't blame her. She's fine. In fact, she probably likes it better. It's how TV used to look.
Well, she used to have HD service, and my brother who lives with her got rid of it because they said they couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
Which I think it's crazy, but even with...
Right.
Of course you can tell the difference.
Of course you can tell the difference, yeah.
I know, but I liken it that, you know, when you went from a CRT TV to an LED 720 TV, standard definition looked horrible. So I'm thinking if you take a standard definition, you go to even a higher resolution TV, a 1080p without an upscaler, I would think it looks even worse.
It does. You see all the flaws in crystal clear perfection.
Okay. So, I'm probably
so you want an upscaler. You want an upscaler for sure. Now, as I said, it may be that there is an upscaler in the U-verse box. I don't know that for a fact. A lot of boxes, Blu-ray DVD players, a lot of boxes have upscalers in them.
Okay, well, I'll just get her a 720 TV.
I think you get a 720 with upscaling, absolutely. Why spend the extra money? Get a Vizio. They're very good. They're cheap.
Okay.
You know?
Do you mind if I ask you another quick question?
Not at all.
Okay, so I just ventured into the world of Chromebooks based upon your glowing reviews.
Okay. Oh, now I'm worried. Are you okay with it?
Well, here's the deal. So I bought two different brands to experiment.
They're cheap. You can do that, can't you?
Absolutely. It's great. So I bought an Asus, the 10-inch with a touchscreen.
Very nice.
And I bought the new Acer with the 11.6-inch screen without a touchscreen.
Yeah.
So a buddy of mine says, well, I don't see the value of a touchscreen with a Chromebook. I disagree.
I do, too. In fact, the Chromebook I love the best, which is a very expensive one, comes from Google. It's their Pixel, and it's touch.
Why aren't these guys making an 11.6 or 13-inch with a touchscreen?
Cost.
That's more down on the affordable range.
Cost.
It would sell like crazy.
But that's the price is too high because you have to pay more for that display. That's all.
Okay.
You see that even with, for instance, my Dell here. You can buy it in touch or non-touch versions. It's considerably more for the touch version because those are more expensive displays. That's all.
Yeah, but that Asus was only $229 with touchscreen.
I don't know how they're doing it, but it is smaller, right?
Yeah. I'm older. I'm 56. I'm up in your age bracket. You know, you need better eyes.
I like a big screen, yeah. Well, I tell you, the best Chromebook made is $1,200. It comes from Google. It's called their Pixel. They made it just to prove you don't have to be cheap to be a Chromebook. And it has touch. It has it's 3,000 by 2,000 display resolution. It's beautiful. It's a pleasure, a joy to work with. It's very fast, but it's way overpriced for a Chromebook. I feel like Dell and others are now starting to do mid-range Chromebooks. The one you bought is around $200. They're starting to make $400 and $500 Chromebooks that will have more of those features, the touch screen, the larger screen, higher quality processors, more RAM. All of that makes it a better experience. One of the things they really stint on in these cheaper Chromebooks is the RAM.
And yes, I agree.
When you have 4 gigs of RAM in a Chromebook, it sings. 2 gigs, not so much. But it's all about cutting costs because they don't perceive that as something people are going to spend money on. And I disagree. I think Dell is starting to offer mid-range. I think you're going to start seeing more mid-range Chromebooks. Acer, I think, as well. I think it's a great choice. Congratulations on your perspicacity and your brilliance. You clearly understand the computer world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo right after this. Echo, who is Dorothea Lange?
Dorothea Lange was an influential American documentary photographer and photojournalist, best known for her Depression-era work for the Farm Security Administration.
Echo, stop. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. I'm sorry, I'm playing with my Echo. I can't help it. I have to talk to her because I get lonely in between the breaks. Just me and, well, Heather Hammond's here and she's answering the phone. Nathan Staten playing the hits. I guess, really, I'm not that alone. And you, all of you. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go back to the phones. Tom in Warren, Ohio. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Leo. How's Petaluma treating you today?
It's raining. And that's a good thing.
We're getting a little bit. You're not getting any frozen precipitation, though. We're getting a little bit of flakes.
Are you getting some snow there? Well, these things
just
happen.
Just slightly. Yeah, love your shows. Love your podcast. Keep it up.
Thanks, Tom.
Hopefully I'll come up next time. And when you move into the new studio?
Looks like we're going to take this studio. We're going to pack it all up in little tiny boxes and carry it over to the new studio in about June or thereabouts.
Oh, okay. This year, then. Later this year.
Soon. But because we're not designing all new stuff, we're just taking the old one over. It doesn't take as much time. Okay. Took us about 8 months to build this thing. This was a big project.
Yeah, that was a nice project.
And we did such a good job. I don't want to start over. We're just going to take what we got and move it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to come visit the new studio.
Please do. When it gets done. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I got the. As you suggested, the TP-Link, I think it was, for Powerline.
Yeah, yeah.
But I go to plug it in my router. I don't have any more plugs in my router. I got it all filled up.
No, you don't. You don't plug it into your router. Well, I guess you do.
So the idea is
you plug it in the wall, and the base unit is plugged into your router because it obviously has to have some internet provided to it. You can get a hub or a switch that you would then attached to your router that would give you more ports. It's basically, you know, just a more port device. I think I have one right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a hub, sort of like I used to plug in your computer.
Yeah, remember those? Okay. In those old days? This is also from TP-Link because they make fairly inexpensive stuff. This is a gigabit desktop switch, they call it. It's got 8 ports. So you attach one of those ports to your router, that gives you 7 more.
Yeah, now I saw a video. I tried looking up something about a router, and I guess there's different ports on there. There's WAN and there's LAN. It doesn't matter which you plug it into.
Yeah, you plug the router into you take one out of the router and plug it into the WAN port. That means you've connected on the hub or the switch. That means you've connected the switch to your router. The switch doesn't do any routing. It's just, you know, it's just a box. It's and then the rest of them are LAN ports. Those are good. One of them can go to your power line networking, and if you don't use the others, you don't need to. In which case, you probably should get the fewest, you know, port, like a 4-port hub. People don't. No. I think, you know, the truth is, all you need is a hub, but you're going to be hard pressed to find anything labeled hub. They label them switches. There's a technical difference between a switch and a hub. A hub is just a passive. It's basically a splitter. A switch has more electronics in it and it does some routing. It will allow you to separate out different parts of the network. They may call them switches, but as far as I'm concerned, they're hubs. They don't do much. They do a few things, but they don't do a whole lot.
Yeah, I have my UMA plugged in, and I have my door plugged in, and I got all kinds of tech gadgets over here.
Yeah.
Watching your network, you got me all teched out.
I know. It's like extension plugs. You run out of plugs fast as soon as you start ramping up.
Oh, yeah, really. I wish this house had Ethernet ports plugged in every room. That would be nice.
I know what you mean. Yeah, lots of companies make these. They should be fairly cheap. There's nothing much going on in there.
All right, I'll check it out. Okay. I'll ask Amazon Echo.
Have the Echo buy one. I'm okay. Sorry, I wasn't talking to you, Echo. Oh man, I changed her. She has now a new phrase. You have activation phrases. It used to be you could call her Alexa. That's the most common. I think people call her that. You could call her Amazon. And I say her because she has a female voice. And now you can call her Echo, which is the name of the product. So I've changed it to Echo because I don't want to use what everybody else is using, because then you're listening to the radio and all of a sudden your Echo starts talking. Larry in Dover, Delaware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leo. How you doing? Larry, K3LT here.
Well, hello, K3LT, W6TWT here.
Well, nice to finally work you there, old man.
don't ask for a QSL card. I don't have any, but
neither do I. That makes two of us.
Oh, there you go. You're as bad a ham as I am.
Well, I just got recently back into it. The Yaesu System Fusion.
Those are nice and inexpensive. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they weren't inexpensive when I bought them, hopefully the repeaters are inexpensive.
Right.
They're almost giving them away.
Yeah.
About $500 a piece. So my club has two of them now.
Nice.
So
put those up on the mountain, huh?
There are no mountains in Delaware. We're pretty flat here. We have to resort to water towers and stuff like that.
Put them on a big stick.
Yeah, they're on the sticks. Yeah, but the digital mode, I tell you what, it solved a lot of problems for me as far as understandability, and we just have to get some people to buy the radios and start using it some more. But we have got a pretty big and slowly growing a user base for it.
For people who are baffled, we're talking about amateur radio or ham radio. I think we left a lot of people in the dust about 10 minutes ago.
Wow. Well, let's get them out of the dust and talk about something they could probably relate to. I've seen the TV ads for this thing called PC-Matic, which the screener lady. She laughed. She called it a magic pill to clean up the viruses and malware on your computer. I'm skeptical, and
you
I just
should be.
Know,
By yeah. the way, now with Super Shield.
Oh, God.
This is not anything anybody should buy.
I didn't think so. I just wanted to hear it from you, man.
This is from the guys who used to do PC Pit Stop. All of these are sort of do something, but nothing really significant. Truth is, modern operating systems don't need the maintenance that they used to. And I think a lot of us old-timers think, well, every once in a while, you got to put it up on blocks, drain the crankcase, tune the plugs, you know, check the timing. You don't have to do that anymore. Computers pretty much run themselves. And any program that actually would do anything to speed up your computer is more likely to do more harm than good. You know, an antivirus isn't a bad thing, although I hope you've heard me when I've said in the past, it is no longer the be-all and end-all for computer security, mostly because bad guys put out these viruses and they spread like wildfire long before your antivirus can respond. So you're still going to get viruses, and if you've got a virus, then it doesn't matter if you have an antivirus. It's too late. Once a bad guy can control your machine, the first thing he does is disable or you know, make the antivirus less effective. So I'm not a big fan of any of this stuff. It's a good idea probably to have an antivirus. Microsoft provides one free in all current versions of Windows. That's good enough. And don't buy the stuff you see advertised on TV. It's may not be snake oil, but it doesn't do much. Doesn't do much. It's like Carter's Little Liver Pills. A fine product in and of themselves, but don't count on it to fix your computer. 8888-ASK-LEO. Thank you. I'm glad you called, though. 73. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, hello, hello. Good to have you here. Taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up in just 15 minutes from right now. But meanwhile, let's keep answering those phones. Next, Vaughn in Santa Clarita. Hello, Vaughn.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. But I'm watching this this political debacle, and I'm looking at our political system, which is stuck in the 19th century, and I'm curious why we haven't moved into the 21st century, why there hasn't been a single politician who sort of embraced technology and said, hey, let's set up a website where every registered voter can go in, see any bill coming up, cast their virtual vote, and whatever the people say, that's the way I vote every time.
There really is a movement towards a more transparent government. There are people trying to do this, both in and out of government. My friend Tim O'Reilly, who owns O'Reilly Publishing, has been very big on transparent government, has made good progress in some states, California, for instance. Just the first step, getting everything online, is a huge hurdle because these systems are all paper-based, but getting every law online. In fact, there are some issues with this. There's a company that publishes laws in a big paper-bound form. I'm trying to remember what state. Is it Texas? That is suing the state saying you can't publish online. That'll put us out of business. Maybe it's, I forgot which state, maybe Louisiana. So there are definitely vested interests always. There's always a vested interest trying to slow this down. There's also the larger issue of, and I think this is maybe as yet unsolved, of security. So there are voting machines. Maybe you've heard of them. A company like Diebold makes these voting machines, and they have been notoriously unreliable. In fact, they've been easy to hack. So there's some reluctance to moving to online voting because of the concern that the vote tallies would be hacked or modified, or you know, by malfeasance, by somebody who had a vested interest. But until we get a system where we can, you know, we can't right now, we're so behind the times, we can't even figure out, you know, how to get people to keep their passwords safe.
But going back to what you were saying, that's a really good point. But if the person was staying running for office, because when the government gets involved, there's all sorts of regulations. So what if a politician said, let's team with private industry and let's put everything at the voters' fingertips? And it wasn't bound through the government. It was essentially taking the temperature of the people they're supposed to represent and then voting according to that. So it would be outside of, like, the government entity in and of itself.
That's one of the movements that's going on with this transparent government. I found the state. It's Georgia. So there's a guy named Carl Malamud, who's a great friend and hero of mine, who has gone from state to state trying to make public documents we own from state governments to publish them online. He did this in the state of Georgia, and they're now suing him for infringing copyright. They say, we own the copyright. Wait a minute. No, the people of Georgia own those laws, not the legislature. The lawsuit, which was filed last year in Atlanta, accused Malamud of piracy and, get this, terrorism.
Really?
Through his website, which you should check out, public.resource.org, he provides you and me with access to searchable and downloadable scan of the official code of Georgia, annotated. That is the body of state law. The state wants him to stop, and they're suing him. So the answer to your question is, yeah, why aren't we? Well, I'll tell you why. Backward points of view from a number of people, including state legislators.
That's still using the state's detailed information. So I can imagine if he's not giving credit.
We paid for this. This is not the legislature of the state of Georgia is in no way separate from the people of the state of Georgia. We own that. But there's that attitude is everywhere. You'll see cities trying to keep Google from publishing subway time schedules, saying, no, you can't publish that. We're going to make money on that. This has been going on forever. Malamud has been doing this with the U.S. House of Representatives. He's been doing it with many states, one by one. Remember, the Security and Exchange Commission has a database called EDGAR. That's of corporate filings, also part of the public record. He finally got the SEC to publish those. So if you believe in this, I agree with you, You go to public.resource.org and support Carl Malamud and his works, because it really is exactly – it's the first step. I mean, we can't even get this the state laws online. I love your proposal. Why don't we have legislators who have websites where they're saying what's going on and we can cast our vote and so forth? I think we need to do this. I agree. And I think one of the guys who's doing a great job – Tim O'Reilly, his government 2.0 summits have been going on now for some years. That's what Tim calls it, government 2.0. And Carl's been working with Tim. And I just think it's such a good idea. And he's, by the way, looking for donations. There's a lot of reasons, most of them having to do with entrenched interests. You know, people who have been making money on this, or who just don't want the public to know what's going on. You know, I think there's a lot of people in government who would kind of prefer the public didn't really see the sausage being made. They like those backroom deals. And I think you're absolutely right. Transparent government is what we need and what we deserve. You're an optimist, and you keep fighting the fight. There's definitely a fight to be fought. KC in Topic, Arizona. Hi, KC. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That's Topak, Arizona.
Topak. Sorry about that. Hi, Casey.
That's a small town. I ain't proud of it much.
I'm proud of it. Gosh darn it. Bless you, Topak. What can I do for you?
Well, my daughter bought me a Samsung Galaxy Grand Prime.
What a nice daughter.
And I'm not used to having a phone like this whatsoever. What's the good and bads on it?
Well, it's a smartphone. It's running Android. It's not running the most recent Android. It's an older, less expensive phone. It's a good choice for your first smartphone. The idea is it's an internet browser, so you can put, for instance, you should try Google Maps. Be the first thing I'd try. It will get data from your cell phone carrier. You can use Maps to pinpoint your location and get directions. Just go to the Google Store. It's on there. They call it the Play Store, and it's free to download. In fact, it's amazing that it's free. Google Maps. Actually, it's probably already on there. It's part of the Google distribution. You can get email on it. You can send text messages, and instead of trying to piece it out on a dial that's designed for numbers, you actually get a real keyboard on the screen. That's a great way to stay in touch. I use text messaging a lot. You can even make video calls with your daughter and others if you install Skype, another free program on there. There's lots of things you can do. Don't get overwhelmed by it. I'd start with Maps because that's kind of a simple, intuitive, and yet very valuable tool. You can figure out what restaurants are open, where the nearest gas station is, get directions where to places you're going. It's better than a GPS, and it's built into your phone, and it's free to use. I think that's a good place to start. You might want to maybe put some music on there, too. You can listen to it. 8888 Ask Leo. The Gizwiz is coming up. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He's got some crazy gizmo or gadget, no doubt, for us. And we'll continue the show. The last segment of the day, right after this. Leo Laporte. Oh, I think our network is back up and running. Yeah. Wow. Listen to that sound. Leo Laporte.
I am the tech guy. Woohoo!
But they rebooted the Frammets. Our show today brought to you by Epson, those great Epson EcoTank printers. I think this is so cool. It's nice when a company listens to its users and says, you don't want to have to buy cartridges in the middle of a print job? Oh, you want to have 2 years of ink in the box? Okay. You want to have inexpensive replacement bottles or packs when you run out after 2 years? Yeah, we can do that. And then they put it on their best printers, their Precision Core printers. Go to Epson, EPSON.com/EcoTank. You know I'm an Epson lover. I have been ever since I got my first dot matrix Epson FX80 way back when. Been using Epson ever since. For photo printing, they've always been the best. And I love the Precision Core technology. It gives me very clear, crisp black text, like three seconds a page. Like, that's because it does 40 million drops of ink a second. Vivid colors. Auto two-sided printing, no warm-up time either, and a 30-page auto document feeder that actually works. Plus, yes, cloud print. It easily prints wirelessly from tablets and smartphones, AirPrint. And I love this printer. The new EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, as you can see, it features an innovative refillable ink tank. So when you get the printer, you load up the ink from the little bottles. We did this. Lisa just got hers, and it's ready to go. And I don't have to worry about ink forever, for ages. Epson EcoTank. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. And all the EcoTank printers, whether you get the 4550, perfect for home use, or get the big buddy that does like 20,000 pages between ink refills. I mean, it's huge. You're going to have the same unbeatable combination of convenience and value. Ultra-low-cost ink replacement bottles, too. Epson. We love them. You'll love them. Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. EPSON.com/EcoTank. And when you see one in the store, pick it up. You'll be glad you did. Epson. Exceed your vision. Ah, musical director Nathan Staton. He's celebrating. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo, the Giz Fizz. He joins us each week. Giz Whiz. You do the Giz Fizz, but you are the Giz Whiz.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. It's a little confusing.
The Giz Whiz, creator of the Giz Fizz.
Thank you. GIZWIZ.BIZ. I didn't realize this is, I just read an article about Alfred E. Newman in, of all things, the Paris Review.
Yes.
Is
yes.
this like the 60th anniversary of the founding of Mad Magazine? I think it is. I think this is a special year.
We should do something about it.
You maybe ought to have a party.
Right, yeah. I think we passed the 60th year.
It was a really good article about the history of, you know, Alfred E. Newman. I guess somebody sued, but it turned out that
article is how Alfred E. Newman came into being. Yes. And yes.
Yeah, really exactly. good. But of all places, the Paris Review, my goodness.
I know. Well, that'll knock them down a notch.
The long, tangled history of Alfred E. Newman, a boy with no birthday turns 60, according to the Paris Review.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Maybe that Alfred is 60.
I think Alfred is. He was not in the original sets of meds.
Wow.
I think he came in at issue 20.
December 1956. So he's my age.
Yeah.
You're better looking. My ears stick out a little bit. So Dickie D is, of course, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, has been for many a year. And I grew up reading Dick and his parodies in Mad Magazine. I've always loved him. But he's also a gadget fanatic and brings us a gizmo or a gadget every week. And what do you got this week for us?
Well, I have something from Wowie. You probably know Wowie. Yeah. We've done a lot of Wowie stuff. They do very innovative things. And it was something I found at Toy Fair. It's not coming out to the fall, but this is to start kids as low as age 4 to learn about programming.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's a little animated robot. I guess he's about 7 inches tall, called Koji. And they got the name Koji from coding and emojis.
Oh.
So it's directing the robot what to do by using emojis.
What? And then, even if a kid's nonverbal, they can do this.
Exactly. Exactly. Holy cow. And then as it goes on, the kid learns about his buddies, which are Loop, Sequence, and Macro.
Whoa.
And this is he has little sound effects. You can say, at Toy Fair, the guy said, I'll have him do three turns. I'll have him walk over to you and then eat a cheeseburger. And I said, I'm starving. Dennis is starving. Make it three cheeseburgers. So you just program that. And he has a little screen. So you program it on a smartphone or a tablet. And then Koji does what you want, walks over, faces you. The cheeseburgers come up. You hear him eating them. The next cheeseburger comes up. You can send him musical instruments, and he'll play them. It's very
this
clever.
This sounds really great. And they're saying for kids as young as four?
Yeah, that's what the spokesperson said. I went on their website, and it said ages 6 to 12.
But I could see nonverbal kids could do this.
No, absolutely.
There's no language.
There's no language. All you do is pick emojis and direction arrows tell Koji what to do. And Leah, suggested retail price is going to be $60, $59.99.
I'm thrilled that they're... Wowie is good for them. This is great.
Yeah, they do some fun stuff, and this is, I think, going to be big.
Not till the fall.
It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge.
Huge.
This is for Christmas then.
Probably. Exactly. Right. They said it would be on shelves probably in September, but certainly a Christmas item.
Wow, I think this is a great idea. You know, we're all trying to get kids to, you know, learn science and engineering and math and stuff. And, you know, this is a great way to do it. If you can make something physical move, it's much more approachable, right?
Absolutely. And he's fun. And he has little tractor treads that so he roams around on. I think it's very clever.
Wowie is
a little beyond me, but
yeah. Well, it's too hard for you and me, but the 4-year-old, no problem. WOWWEE.com, and it's Koji, COJI. Look for it for this holiday season.
Yes,
and you can always, anytime there's a toy fair, you can look for Dick DiBartolo. He will be there. He loves those.
Yeah, I do.
He loves those. And on the Giz Fizz and on the Giz Whiz. And you can find that at GIZWIZ.TV. That's his weekly podcast. And his website, GIZWIZ.BIZ, GizWiz.biz, is where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine if you can identify a close-up of a gizmo or a gadget.
Of a new gizmo or gadget, because now it's March.
We just finished. You want to tell us what the one from January February was?
It was actually like 3 dozen people had it right, because the day after the contest went up, Home Depot put it on sale.
So,
it is a little device called Twist and Seal that you put two back on up a little bit. Twist and Seal, you put two extension cords in it and then close it down so that it makes the connection waterproof. And if you're dragging like a leaf blower or something around the yard, the two extension cords won't unplug.
Oh.
So that's what it was. But as I said, like 36 people got it right, but we picked a dozen at random since that's the max.
And what was the clever wrong answer?
Oh, yeah. You know, a waterproof travel case for a Nerf football. A lot of people are very funny. The one in the contest was orange, and it said the original Beatles concept album, Orange Submarine.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. The people are very clever.
Well,
very clever.
You get more chances to win an autographed copy of Matt if you're clever than if you're right. And there's a new one up there, and well, that's pretty obviously everything. Everything you do, it looks like something for Smurfs. This is a Smurf shower head, clearly. Yeah.
Send that in.
Yeah. Well, all you got to do is go to gizwiz.biz, and you can play the game. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right, gizwiz.tv to follow him on his great podcast with Chad Johnson, the Gizwiz Show. Do I have time? I think I do. One more call. Benjamin in Bryan, Ohio. Benjamin, you have eSights.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm great. So we were talking earlier about these, they're $15,000. They're like a visor, like sunglasses that people with low vision can wear. There's a camera built in, and it will enhance the image so that you can see it and use it. And you have a pair?
Yes, sir, I do. I've had them for a little over 2 weeks now. Have done a lot with them. I went to Toronto personally to get the item because I don't know if anyone told you, they're a Canadian-based company. And I have struggled with my vision for a little over, since birth and been visually impaired for 26 years.
These are not for profoundly blind people, but if you have some vision, they can amplify whatever you're looking at, right?
That is correct.
And you like it? I mean, did it take a while to get used to? Has it been a great thing for you?
It has been. I've gotten a lot of my donations came in with a community wide effort.
That's nice.
In the ham radio
community. Oh, that's great. Yeah, there's another great thing hams have done. Hey, we're out of time, but I'm glad to get that testimonial. ESIGHT, the eSights. I thank you, Benjamin. I thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll come back next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.